News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8.07 last night. A lot of fun having the whole team together. A little camaraderie, a little charity, a little cheers to charity, and thanks to Fairhope Brewing on St. Louis Street, downtown Mobile, on a chilly night.
Yep.
But thanks for the for those who came out and helped us raise some money for Warrior Legacy Ranch.
Yeah, good seeing some of you out there, and really great to see Patrick jump again with Warrior Legacy Ranch. And reminder, as he builds up what will, and already is, but will be a fantastic resource for our veterans, that they're still looking for sponsorships and donations in many ways. So if you want to help out, warriorlegacyranch.org. But that was my first time in the Mobile Fairhope Brewing. You know, it used to be Wingman. What an absolutely beautiful location.
It's right next to the Cheese Cottage, a little restaurant there on St. Louis Street. And it's a huge facility.
It is.
And really nice.
It's very nice. If you haven't been, you've got to check it out. Well, we've been talking a lot about elections and midterms coming up next year. And great to have someone who's been on with us before, but it's been a minute. Caroline Dobson, who's running for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State. Caroline, thanks for coming on Mobile Mornings.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. How are y'all doing?
Remember us, Caroline? Dan and Dalton?
Oh, yes. No, bright and early. No, I miss y'all. I hope you've been doing well.
Yeah, the family well? Everybody, the kids are good?
We're doing great. Had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and yeah, now just trying to gear up for Christmas with a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, so Lots of fun activities.
Yeah, I could just lock up those closets. Santa leaves stuff all over the place.
You got to be careful.
That's right. Well,
Caroline, it's great to talk with you. And, of course, we talked throughout your run for AL2 and now running for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State. And we don't want to look to the past too much, but I figured it'd be a great question to kind of start with you since we haven't talked yet this campaign cycle. What'd you learn that first go around? I know you're running for a different office now, but that was your first time running. I mean, that was the first time doing a full campaign. What do you think you took from that, and how you've applied it so far for your run for Secretary of State?
Well, first and foremost, that we truly have a wonderful state. I mean, I knew that because I grew up in Southwest Alabama, not that far from where Dalton grew up, and I made a conscious decision. I had gone to law school out of state, but wanted to raise my kids back in Alabama. But wow, we have so many opportunities. We have so many natural resources, so much natural beauty, and our greatest resource is our people. You know, campaigning in a contested general election, I was campaigning everywhere, in every community, in urban areas, in rural areas, in Democrat areas and Republican areas, and we have a tremendous state. We have so much opportunity, but we need to have trust in our elected officials, and that starts in having trust in our elections. You know, trust, of course, means that we can believe that the people leading us are the people that we, the voters, the rightful voters who are registered, who are citizens of the U.S., actually selected. But it also goes deeper than that. When you don't have trust in your elections, then you don't have trust that the people leading you actually have the authority from the people, and then therefore you're less likely to participate in government, to be an active, engaged citizen, to take the opportunity to be informed and to really be engaged in your community. And so that's what in order for our state to really maximize and be good stewards of these opportunities that God has given us, we need to have trust in our elections. And I think right now we're at a moment where there just isn't a lot of trust and there's a lot of confusion, especially after the Mobile mayoral election, which I'm so grateful for Mobile's new mayor, and that he defeated Barbara Drummond. But, you know, there were a lot of discrepancies, logistical issues with that election. That's just an example, one of many throughout the state. Where we really need to shore up the trust. That means eliminating fraud, but it also means making information more accessible when it comes to, you know, which precinct to go to, making sure that we don't have precincts that are overloaded due to population growth. In Lee County, for instance, high population growth area, couple cycles ago, one precinct had 16,000 voters.
Yeah.
You know, and that means people who, you know, take, you know, try to go vote on their way to work or take their lunch break to go vote aren't able to because they have to wait in line for 2 to 3 hours. That's disenfranchisement of people like you and me who go to work every day. These are the people we want to be voting because more likely than not, conservative voters are ones who are bringing home a paycheck and, and having to make ends meet. And so, you know, we just need to make sure that on all fronts we're building trust and ensuring that we have secure elections.
How does something like that happen, Caroline, in Lee County, where the locals are not on top of it quickly enough to figure out this discrepancy and how it's going to affect voting?
Yes, well, so that's, I mean, you know, again, where you kind of have some population explosions and you, you know, I mean, it can happen very, very quickly. You see some of these high growth areas. Baldwin County is one. But it means that we need the Secretary of State who's going to work with county commissions because often county commissions are the ones who are establishing these precincts and kind of allocating those. Meanwhile, you have some precincts like in North Monroe County where I'm from, Old Texas, Alabama, I think they're were 26 voters in the Old Texas, Alabama precinct. So you have this huge disparity, you know, depending on where you are in the state of, you know, how many voters, how many poll workers you need. And that's another issue, too. During the course of this campaign, I'm also trying to raise awareness about how the fact that election integrity really rests on the shoulders of all of us. Mm-hmm. The Secretary of State's office employs less than 40 people. You know, these election day workers, these are all private citizens like you and me. And I think a lot of folks just assume that these people just kind of magically appear on election day to ensure the integrity of our elections. But we really need, we certainly need younger people to be stepping up. And we need, you know, small business owners to encourage, you know, if they can spare an employee or two, you know, encourage them to do the training and give them a day off to be poll workers because right now it's mostly retired folks. And I'm so grateful for our retirees taking the time to do that. But they're going to age out eventually and we're going to need the next generation of election day workers to be ready to go.
And God bless them, right? But, you know, even putting the iPads in their hands threw a lot of them for quite a loop with the registration and everything like that. I talked with Caroline Dobson running for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State. And you know, we've already talked so much about elections, and I think that's what most people think of when they think Secretary of State. But to you, what's your bigger job description like, or how would you do things differently than how Wes Allen has handled the office? What do you, when someone says, okay, tell me what a Secretary of State does, how would you kind of sum that up?
Yes, well, I mean, there are so many discrete job duties of the office. The office was actually predates Alabama as a state. There was a secretary for the territory of Alabama before statehood was achieved. So, you know, over the course of 200 plus years, there are a lot of kind of discrete duties of the office. I think per statute and constitution, there are over 1,000 different duties of the office. But the other main kind of area of jurisdiction is business services and corporate filings. You know, I have a tremendous respect for Secretary Allen. My background's a little bit different. I'm a corporate attorney. I've spent my entire legal career advising small business owners on how to buy and sell property and on corporate formation matters, helping them form LLCs. So I've been interacting with that side of the Secretary of State's office my entire career. Also, both my parents were each small business owners. So I think kind of coming at the office through the lens of a small business owner, how can we cut the red tape? How can we streamline services, reduce fees, make it a lot more accessible? I was talking to someone yesterday who told me that she's a farmer, owns a pretty sophisticated farming operation, but she told me point blank she hired a law firm to create an LLC for her, file a form on the website just because it was the website's cumbersome, complicated. Wow. It's not intuitive. And we're seeing this, you know, President Trump is taking this common sense approach and trying to increase transparency and efficiency. He's appointed Joe Gebbia, one of the founders of Airbnb, to be the first U.S. chief design officer to revamp all the federal government websites so that there's not this kind of like layer between the government and the people, it's a lot more intuitive. President Trump said he wanted to create an Apple Store-like experience on all federal government websites. And Secretary of State's website here in Alabama is one of the most highly trafficked state government websites. And so I would love to kind of emulate that, make it a lot easier, user-friendly, collaborative and cooperative with small business owners, because small business owners are truly the backbone of our economy in this state. And so those are my goals on that front.
Caroline, of electric cooperatives, so the Forestry Association, they both talked about your heart for rural Alabama. How does, when you think elections in the state of Alabama, naturally would think of the cities, Huntsville, Birmingham, Mobile. But as Secretary of State, how would that change the way you consider elections in this state from a rural perspective and from those areas, too, that aren't given as much attention?
Yes. Well, I mean, North Monroe County is not quite the Black Belt, I don't think, but we're close.
Yeah.
There are counties in the Black Belt that are notorious for election fraud, and it's on, it's on local races. So it never breaks the headline because it doesn't impact who's our governor or where our electoral college votes go. But I want to create an election integrity division, so a branch within the office of Secretary of State, to just focus on that enforcement of the really good election laws we have on the books, but ensuring that we're enforcing them everywhere. We need to be enforcing them in our cities, of course, but we can't ignore these rural areas, because if you have a corrupt county commissioner or a school board member that was handpicked due to voter fraud, that impacts the education that our young people are getting in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Here's an example in Perry County, for instance. This is as of 2024, there were less than 6,600 voter age adults living in Perry County, and yet there were close to 7,700 registered voters in Perry County.
Wow.
That's a big discrepancy that impacts elections. In the Uniontown mayoral election, in a runoff, the gentleman that ultimately, quote unquote, won the election with more absentees than in-person votes. These are real. Uniontown, that's 1,100 people. Mm-hmm. But I'm from a town of 200 people. So I can relate that this has a huge impact on how your taxpayer dollars are used. And again, the engagement of local communities, the development. So, in so many cases, our greatest natural resources are in our rural areas.
Mm-hmm. And you've talked before too, Caroline, about, audits, like post-election audits. I guess that would probably require legislation through the state or something like that. But how do you picture, what would those audits look like in practice? And do you think, would it be maybe too much for certain municipalities to handle? Or what are your thoughts on audits after elections?
Well, I'm really excited. So Joe Lovern from kind of Auburn area state house rep is introducing post-election audit legislation. Debbie Wood, who's now lives in Baldwin County, had introduced legislation last session. But we're one of, I think, only a handful of states that doesn't have any type of post-election audit. Again, this will help to bolster trust and of the electorate in our election. I mean, California and New York have post-election audits. So we need audits, and we need to ensure that they're conducted in a common sense, cost-effective way. We need to make sure that they're a good use of our taxpayer dollars. But audits will help us not only, identify problems we didn't know exist, but in some cases, for instance, in Mobile mayoral race, where some voters were marked as inactive in the runoff when they had been active voters in the initial mayoral election, an audit might help determine the root of that problem. Identifying fraud, but also kind of helping us drill down on where there are logistical errors, what's going on.
Karen, what's interesting about that is I was one of those voters. In fact, as it turns out, when you look back at the problem, I might have been one of the last voters that was flagged before they got it all straightened out. Mm-hmm. That's because Sean Sullivan dragged me in here, put a microphone in front of my face and said, tell them what just happened.
Yeah, and you are an active voter. So
I'm a very active voter, right.
So that did hit close to home, and we had some great insight on how that whole thing went down.
Yeah, I didn't know whether to be mad or frustrated. I really didn't know what to think of the whole experience. But as it turned out, when we talked about it, it may have helped get things done.
And you didn't just fold up your chair and go home like so many people may have been wanting to do.
Did.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I did a provisional ballot. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get, Caroline, before we let you go, I want to get at least one listener question in here. And Jason wanted to know, does Mrs. Dobson believe our notary public system is sound, and does she see room for improvement there? He says, in my opinion, the standards have slipped greatly. Your thoughts on the notary public system?
Yes. No, I think, I think it's very antiquated. I think we need our standards heightened, and also really to just kind of bring that system into the 21st century, as well as, making sure that we, again, have a better database of where notaries are. I mean, I'll say growing up in Beatrice, Alabama, with less than 200 people, there is one lady, Miss Wynette Black, who was a notary in the whole entire town.
Yeah.
And so everyone, but we went to church with her, so we knew that she was a notary. But I think for a lot of people, it can be daunting to try in rural areas to try to track down a notary. So I'd also like to see a database of where, an average person, if they need to get a probate document or all the many documents that you might need to get notarized, have access to where to find a notary.
Caroline, where do folks find out more about you and your candidacy if they want to get a better idea so they can vote for you?
Yes. No, please check us out on social media, Dobson for Alabama. Also, our website, dobsonforalabama.com. We have upcoming events. You can request a yard sign. Again, I'm so grateful for all the folks in Mobile and all the support and love and encouragement that they poured over me last year, and I'm looking forward to hopefully having an opportunity to serve our state.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on, Caroline, and I'm sure we'll talk again with those primaries coming up. Won't be long, May, so good luck and stay safe out there on the road.
Thanks. Merry Christmas. If I didn't talk to y'all before.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Caroline Dobson running for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State.
And coming back, we had a lot of good talks on the text line this morning about our three big things. We'll get into some of that and also talk with Jeff Poor before the end of the hour as Mobile Mornings continues after the break.
Getting your morning moving. Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Owig.
827, get into your text here in a minute, 251-343-0106. A bad start to the SEC-ACC challenge for the SEC last night. I don't know if you saw some of those scores, but Tennessee, Florida, and Kentucky, South Carolina. Notre Dame got a win.
Notre Dame beat Missouri.
So bad start for the SEC tonight. You get Alabama and Auburn with their chances.
Georgia beat Florida State by like 30.
Did they? Yeah. Wow. Bama will play Clemson tonight, 6:15. Auburn takes on NC State at 8:15. And I say all that because we're in the mix of basketball season, a great time to get the Underdog app. Fast breaks, buzzer beaters, and block parties are here. Underdog is the best place to get in on all of the action. Really easy to set up your entries once you download the app and use my promo code Dalton. Just choose whether your favorite players will go higher or lower on stats like points, rebounds, steals, and more. If you get those entries right, you could win up to 5,000 times your cash. It's really easy to put those entries together and keep up with the stats on the app while you watch the game to see when you have a winner. Download the app today. Use promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, to score $100 in bonus entries when you play your first $5. That's promo code Dalton. Underdog, make plays, win money. Must be 19 plus and present in Alabama. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing. Get terms. _DFS_.html for details. If you're concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
You know, the three big things are what they are because they're big, but I thought this opening line of story number three. Man, nearly 44% of the 16,000 truck driving programs listed nationwide by the government may be forced to close after a review by the Federal Transportation Department found that many of them are not even complying with even minimum requirements. So the Transportation Department said they got to get it right. Mm-hmm. And you close the doors, where are truckers going to be taught how to do their thing correctly or not, in many cases not correctly.
Well, we had a lot of listeners with some great insight on this, and we've been getting texts throughout the morning. I want to go through some of those and kind of get that conversation going, especially with the knowledge that we've seen so many accidents from terrible drivers behind our biggest weapons on the road, big trucks.
They don't even know the language or can read the signs. It's 8:30.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
8:35 on this Wednesday. Right now we ride on over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine. And, you know, heading now to a new year. Won't be long before we're in 2026. And you've got right now some great vehicles on the lot, some of the newest of the new and fanciest vehicles out there. But you have a lot of great pre-owned vehicles, too, for folks who are looking.
That's right. We just traded in two 2525 models with low, low miles on them. And they're all dolled up, looking great. They're white in color. We'll have those out front tomorrow and on the website. And I mean, on the new car side, we have got cars coming in every day. We've got, like I said, 0% on the half ton pickup trucks. Don't forget about that. You know, the businesses want to buy these trucks before the end of the year. We got plenty of them here. We got plenty of work trucks. We got plenty of Yukons. I mean, we've got anything you want. You check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com, or, hey, come by and see us. We're east of I-65 on Dolphin Street. You can't miss us. And we got cars stacked on top of cars.
And before you leave, you know, it's also important that when you buy from a place like McConnell Automotive, that the service department is just as top-notch as the guys and girls up front. And you guys, that's certainly the case over at McConnell Automotive. You take care of the vehicle all the way through.
That's right. We've got a great service department. We've got a great body shop. The body shop back there, you know, with all this rain coming in, you have that unfortunate accident, call 251-476-4141. Ask for Rachel in the body shop. She'll take care of all your insurance needs and try to set you up with a loaner car. I mean, what else can you ask for?
Yeah, not much. Good stuff. Thank you, Louie. Hope you have a great day.
Hey, you too. Y'all have fun. Be careful.
All right. We are having fun. That's Louie Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
That same story we were talking about before we went to the break, the Transportation Department said Monday that it plans to revoke the certification of nearly 3,000 schools, these are these truck driving schools, unless they can comply with training requirements in the next 30 days. The targeted schools must notify students that their certification is in jeopardy. Another 4,500 schools are being warned they may face similar action. I don't know how they're getting around to and finding out about all these schools.
And I think some are just bad schools, but there's so many instances of fraud we see just everywhere these days. It seems like everyone's trying to get a piece, trying to get one over on the taxpayer or somebody. And I just wonder how many of these quote-unquote schools are just feeding systems to bring in, you know, immigrants and get them their CDLs and maybe make a little money on the top of it.
Yeah, they're calling them CDL mills.
CDL mills.
And they advertise being able to train drivers in just a few days, and that's where they're, you know, they entice you in like, hey, look, in 4 days you'll be a truck driver. Mm-hmm. Well, the guy's looking for a job, whether he's from here or Budapest, and he wants a paycheck, and
And we focus, or I do anyway, on, you know, immigrants coming in and getting these CDLs, guys and girls who can't read road signs, don't know the rules of the road. But you know, there's probably a lot of Americans who shouldn't be on the road either who are making their way through there. And a lot of you in the trucking industry or have ties to it with some great insight on this. So I want to get to some of your texts. Chris in Orange Beach, who's been talking CDLs and asking questions of our state for some time now. He says, been behind the wheel of a big truck since I was 18. I'm now 62. Unfortunately, President Biden's administration is the one who started all of this. Prior to their administration, the way you obtain a CDL, go to an Alabama State Trooper's office, take the written test. If you pass it, you go take the driving test. He says, now you have to go to a community college to the tune of some $1,500 for more than 6 weeks to learn how to take the damn test. In essence, Biden said our troopers are not competent enough to administer the test. He said that's all some BS. Another text here, if I can get down to it. As a former law enforcement officer, this is from the texter, as a former law enforcement officer, I totally agree with the reduction of the CDLs to these immigrants that have no possession. I think that's a texting translating issue, mm-hmm. talk while texting, of the English vocabulary, as well as the ability to read and understand the English language. Texter continues, I further suggest that most of these CDL schools be shut down and transfer the responsibility of CDL training to the major trucking companies, like Werner, Swift, Schneider, etc. That way the trucking company will be more accountable for the drivers they get behind the wheel of these much-needed trucks. I know that would make these trucking companies incur an additional expense, but how much is a fatality accident going to cost them in the end? And that's something we were kind of batting around earlier as well. You know, early in the Trump administration, and I hope it's still ongoing, there was massive pressure on illegal immigrant truck drivers. And I remember seeing a video, this was even before Trump took office, of troopers in Arkansas. Texas.
Oh, Arkansas, well, yeah. That was bizarre. I mean, that was the first time we had a story like that, and it was like right in front of our face. Explain what we saw.
Well, in this particular case, they were sitting in a truck stop, or maybe a may have been a weighing in zone.
Way station,
thank you. Word escaped me. And we're just, as guys would park, and they'd pull up to the cab and give them a written test or say, hey, can you write out these sentences in English? Can you read these sentences in English? And if you couldn't do it, then you weren't licensed to drive that kind of truck in the state of Arkansas anymore. And I think that kind of grew around some other states.
Does every state got their own laws?
I'm not exactly sure how that works, and that's where the text line would come in some big handy, give us a big hand right now, because...
Like you could be legal in one state and illegal in another state? I don't know.
And we've seen some of these stories. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but remember there was a terrible accident, and I think it happened in Florida, and the driver got his CDL in California.
Yes, that's right. That's the one where he did the U-turn.
Mm-hmm. And the U-turn,
like
that's right.
It seemed like he didn't care. He was just sitting there, and a car slams into the back of his trailer, and three are dead.
Yeah, and that's one of many of the accidents we've seen over these just last couple of years. Texter here says, I've been doing it for 26 years, driving, that is. I'm all for shutting down the schools that aren't training them. I'm also all for cutting the state off, giving them the test in multiple languages in California. You can take the driver's test in 8 different languages.
Wow.
100%. Maybe someday I'll go back on the road if it becomes a real career again. Same texture says, when it comes to a CDL, it's all covered under federal and it's Department of Transportation.
Okay.
So all states can make up whatever they want. So the federal rules apply nationwide.
Okay, so you have federal rules, and then state by state, you may have different rules or laws that are applied in that state only.
That sounds like what that texter's getting at. Texter here with a simple text, get the non-driving people off the road. Well, sometimes they're getting off the road on their own, just at the wrong times.
Mm-hmm.
And keep the text coming. 251-343-0106. Let's see. Cheese Wagon says motor carrier compliance is federally regulated. State only enforces federal motor carrier laws. They don't have their own set. So state just enforces the federal laws is what it sounds like. Natalie says in order to even have a work permit and green card, one of the requirements is speak, write, and read English. I know. I've been through the process. That's what Natalie says. But it sounds like that standard has been dropped at some point over the years. And that's factual because was it the Ukraine driver or maybe – no, it was that same U-turn driver in Florida with one of the worst accidents we've seen.
He may have been from India originally.
Basically decapitated that vehicle that was traveling the other direction as it pulled that U-turn. But remember, they gave that driver a test right after it, and I think the driver only identified like 2 of 6 road signs. So even beyond just knowing English and being able to read the English-written signs along the road – but just obvious ones that you look at and you realize what it means, this driver was unable to tell police what those meant after killing people with that incredibly dangerous move.
And the Thomasville, again, another one, where the video is absolutely horrifying. That guy's still sitting in jail up there.
Yeah.
He hasn't gotten out of jail yet. They don't.
I find that kind of odd, too. I guess there's one Ukrainian interpreter in the state that's licensed for the court, I guess. And I would think with so many Ukrainian refugees that have come over, you'd have more than one interpreter in our state that's licensed to do that. So I think his next court hearing will be in March. But, yeah, that was an accident that really, I mean, the small community up there in Thomasville, I knew of someone who was part of that accident. And fortunately, they weren't someone who passed away in that accident. But small town, everybody knows everybody. And that was a really, really tough one for the folks up there.
Well, when you saw it, and of course, that's like an intersection right on the edge of town. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows exactly where that intersection is, right? They all understand clearly what happened. And, I mean, they pass it every day.
Yeah.
And that was just a horrible situation, an accident that certainly could have been. And I don't know if it had much to do with the fact that he was Ukrainian. He just wasn't paying attention.
And he had someone in the cab with him, someone that was there. I don't know if they were taking shifts or what. But I think about that all the time, and not just with the big trucks. But when you pull up to a red light, I'm sure I'm not the only one thinking, I hope this person behind me is paying attention and doesn't just drive right on through. Gardner texted in and said, as with any other crimes, one, there needs to be a penalty so stiff that no one will want to break the law. Two, the laws are enforced in a timely manner. Three, we have enough prison space to arrest a lot of criminals. Four, stop spending taxpayer money on any other country and invest in U.S. infrastructure, including prisons and mental health facilities. Say, in my not-so-humble opinion. Great text there from Gardner. Texter here, the responsibility of training truck drivers over to the trucking companies is still not the best idea. That's one that another texter proposed.
Yeah.
Because I've personally seen them pump drivers out like cattle, said, just to have people behind the wheel in the truck.
Yeah, you know, again, you got to be careful. The chicken and the wolf, if you give it to the truck, if it's to their benefit to churn them out almost like the mill would do or is doing, maybe that's not the best idea.
I have one of my best buddies. We were roommates at South, and his journey took him around the country, and then he ended up back in Pensacola. But he drove a big truck in Seattle for some time. And when he would tell me, and they had very strict rules, like, obviously no screens in the vehicle. He wasn't allowed to have his phone or anything like that on, of course, and that's great and safe, but they wouldn't even let you have like any form of nicotine in the cab.
Really?
That's how strict they were with him.
Wow.
But it sounded so intense because he was in Seattle, but he would drive those icy mountains up and down. And then maybe that same day he'd drive through the streets of Seattle and hairpin turns downtown. So
it's like a San Francisco. It's really, really hilly, and it'd be a tough place to drive.
Ice and snow adds quite the factor. His favorite delivery spot, he got to drop something off at the Seattle Seahawks facility one time. So he was very pumped about that.
Also, I've gotten some text this morning about something we've talked a lot about yesterday, the legality of the second shot in taking out that narco-terrorism boat in the Caribbean. That's what a lot of people are talking about right now. Some Republicans, many Democrats talking about the legality of it all. And I heard Yale Law School professor Jed Rosenfeld was a guest on Mark Halperin's podcast Next Up, doing his best to clear up the legality of the second strike on that boat in the Caribbean. And the Washington Post report that alleged that certain language was used by Secretary of State Pete Hegseth, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, in advance of the operation. Here's kind of his legal breakdown.
What the Post alleges is that Mitchell deliberately ordered an attack to kill the survivors, allegedly in compliance with an order that had been given to him by Hegseth saying, kill everybody on board. That's what the Post reported.
Right.
If you accept that story, if it's true, and we don't know if it is, that's a war crime. That's murder. Now, what I think might have happened, and what now people in the administration are saying happened, is what you're saying. No. What Mitchell did was he ordered a second strike to take out the boat. The boat's still carrying the cargo. He took out the boat. It was a collateral damage consequence that the people floating in the water killed. That would be, legally speaking, a completely different story. And that would, involve, the issue of proportionality and so forth.
He also brought up what you brought up yesterday. Like, it's this been going around about Obama back in the day, and it didn't get a whole lot of national attention.
You remember Obama, when he was president, he dropped all these drone bombs on what the United States had determined to be enemy combatants, terrorists, and he killed lots of people standing around. I mean, and you know,
including an American.
Including man, we apologize. You know, sorry, but we were bombing legitimate targets, and you know, yeah, it killed some people, and a lot of folks were upset about that. But that happens in war if you're attacking a legitimate target, and you know, by it just it so happens that it kills some people. You can make legal arguments for that happens all the time in war. So the big question is whether what the Post reported is correct, or whether you know. A different set of facts, like you're suggesting, is correct.
And so, again, narco-terrorism, at this administration is saying we're at war with them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to take the boat out completely, because there's still the threat, because the boat exists, I think that it's a bit of a legal hairpin turn. But
yeah, and you know, the New York Times came out and basically said, hey, the Washington Post put this out without context, kind of disavowing what they had to say. That's the New York Times that did that. But I think you got more leakers in the White House, too. You got to think about that. Who's saying, hey, these were illegal strikes? More coming up.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:56 on Mobile Mornings.
And the Jeff Poor Show is on the way next. Jeff joins us because it's Wednesday. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So let's get it out of the way first. Who are your guests today? Who can we expect on the Jeff Poor Show?
Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall called in from Washington, D.C. That's the 9 o'clock hour. Joey Clark, as we always do on Wednesday, the 10 o'clock hour, and from the Blockchain Association, a guy named Dan Spaller will join us, so stay tuned for that.
Republicans hold on in Tennessee. They win that special election. Talk about that.
Emblematic of what's going to happen here. You know, it'll still be a good cycle for Democrats, I think, but, you know, they can't get out of their own way. They are nominating unlikable candidates. The talking point is this was a plus Trump 22 district, but I mean, Trump's worth probably 6-7 points just by himself.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, like, the district was redrawn. It's not, I mean, it's you look at Cook Political Report, it's a plus 10, not a plus 22. I just think it's a little wishcasting here to think that you got something really a bellwethery coming out of this.
And that part of the state, too, tons of people moving in all the time. And I think
it's changing
a lot from liberal states, too. But the Democrats are, I mean, they know how to spin, right? They're saying this is a big win for them, even though I think he won in the high single digits, even though Trump took it by 22.
9-point win, or 8.9%. It wasn't close. It was supposed to, Emerson had it at just plus two for Van Epps. He outperformed the polls by a lot. Their modeling is going to be wrong in the midterms. We'll talk about more of that on the show. They're going to exaggerate Democrat turnout. They're going to create this perception that Democrats have all the momentum, and they're going to let that impact these models. I just think there's a lot of there's a lot to take away here, and I'm not saying it's a rosy scenario for Republicans, but it's not where Democrats need to be.
Do you feel like Trump will still carry an outsized role in this midterms? Do you think he needs to focus more on getting Republicans elected?
Not really. He just needs to focus on getting his policy, like getting success from his policy, let's say, and not giving them a reason for you to go out and vote for a Democrat.
Should we let LSU fans know that they'll hate Lane Kiffin in due time themselves? Like, it's a PSA, just say
3 years from now,
something like that, maybe 2.5.
Buyer's remorse is coming, guys.
It's Dan and Dalton and Jeff Poor on the way next.